non-commutative motives.
Okay. So thank you. I would like to start by thanking Professor Gore for giving me this opportunity to be here. So one question, one issue I would like to address in this talk is hierarchy theory. In the sense of Quillen, the 60s. So consider the following. Suppose that we have R, a ring associative with units. So we can consider its Grothendieck group as defined by Grothendieck. So you consider the following data as isomorphism classes of finitely generated projective R modules. And then equipped to this direct sum operation. So this is, in fact, an abelian monoid. And the Grothendieck group is, by definition, the closest abelian group associated to this monoid. For instance, if R is a field, then the dimension function will give you an isomorphism between this dot and the natural numbers with the addition. And so the Grothendieck group, in that case, will be Z. So later on, Bass defined what is now nowadays called the K1. So you can consider the following construction. You consider invertible n by n matrices with coefficients in R, and you can embed them in n plus 1 times n plus 1 invertible matrices. And in fact, you can keep on going and pass to the co-limit of this procedure and obtain something called the infinite general linear group on R. And the K1 is, by definition, the abelianization of this group. So for instance, if R is a field, in that case, the determinant function will give you an isomorphism between this group and the multiplicative group of the units of your field. So at this stage, it was clear that these two groups should be part of a family of hierarchy theory groups. Several people made several attempts to define these hierarchy theory groups. And in fact, it was Quillen which came up with an elegant construction, define these higher K-theory groups using, in fact, tools coming from homotopy theory. So we consider this classifying space of GLR. And in fact, he performed the construction nowadays called as the Quillen's plus construction, where we simplify the fundamental, the homotopy group of this space, namely by killing these commutators, and in such a way that we don't change its homology. But when we do this, we change radically these higher homotopy groups. And those are precisely, by definition, the higher K-theory groups of R. So this is a construction. So K-theory is nowadays well used in several subjects. And the point is that it is used because the properties that these groups have. Let me just recall some variants. So also, you have some variants of these classical K-theory groups, something like non-connective K-theory. We have also something called Karubi-Villamayor K-theory. You also have something called homotopy K-theory in the sense of Weigel, etc. So as I was saying, so these groups are used everywhere. But in fact, we really don't understand conceptually this procedure, this somehow mysterious procedure of obtaining higher homotopy groups in this procedure. So in the case of K0, this is well understood. We can, in fact, understand this as being some kind of universal Euler characteristic. In K1, we can, in fact, understood it as being some kind of universal determinant. When we pass to this higher K-theory, in fact, we use them, but we really do not understand them. And so the question, the natural question is, which I call question A, is how to understand, how to characterize conceptually higher K-theory. So one of the main goals of the talk will be to provide an answer to this question. Another issue that I would like to address in this talk the subject called non-commutative algebraic geometry. So it's a quite recent subject which is being promoted by Breinfeld and Kontsevich in this millennium. So, and the idea is the following. So if you start with an algebraic variety and you want to study this algebraic variety, the first thing that you can do is start understanding the well-studied invariants associated to X. So there are plenty of them. For instance, it's Grothendieck group, or it's K-theory, etc., all these variants of K-theory. Even it's Uschel homology, cyclic homology, periodic, that we should think of in characteristic zero as being the algebraic analog of the Ramco homology, etc. And also you have these topological analogs as THH, PC, etc. So in another direction, we can also associate to X something different, namely a triangulated category, this triangulated category of perfect complexes on X, so the Dirac category of perfect complex on X. And the importance of this triangulated category is that every time that we have a correspondence between X and X prime, which induces an equivalence between triangulated categories, that correspondence will induce an isomorphism between all these invariants. So it's natural to ask if you can recover all this information directly from this triangulated category. So this, in fact, can be done in particular cases, for instance, for the Grothendieck group, but not in general. But the reason being is that when you pass from your scheme to this triangulated category, you lose too much concerning X. So in fact, the way out of this problem is, in fact, to stop somewhere in the middle and to consider something, an enhancement of this triangulated category. So there are several possibilities. For instance, a differential graded enhancement or an infinity category enhancement. So as Barwick was telling us about, so this will denote a differential graded enhancement. And I will denote, so infinite will be this infinity category enhancement. And by doing so, not only, so we can also associate to this gadget which has more structure. By doing so, you solve several technical problems that exist in the world of triangulated categories. For instance, in triangulated categories, cones are not functorial, and here that problem is automatically solved. And you recover this triangulated category by passing to the homotopy category associated to it. And now, for this kind of structure, for instance, as Bloomberg was telling us about yesterday, these invariants are in fact well defined. So, and the idea of Drinsel and Kontsevich is precisely that from this point of view of this invariant, there is absolutely no difference between your scheme and this enhanced category. So you should consider, now if I give you an abstract BG or infinity category, you should think of it as being perfect complex over an hypothetical non-commutative scheme and try to extend the classical ideas, results, and insights, techniques from the commutative world, try to do geometry in this non-commutative world. In fact, this program can be in fact defined as the study of BG, or if you want, infinity categories, and the several invariants which are associated to it. So before I continue, just a piece of notation, so I will denote by... Sorry, I don't understand. This?
Yeah.
This compact objects on the Dirac category of X. Yes. So you take the Dirac category of sheaves on X? Yes, and then you take the compact objects inside of them, and that's it. That's one possible characterization. So I will denote this will be the category of small VG categories. And this, I will denote in this way, this category of small infinity categories. So before I continue, I would like to give an example which gives certain insight on this program. So this is a famous example. So it's an example due to Bailenson in a two-pages paper of 78. So if you suppose if you are if X is the projective line, in fact, the perfect complexes on the projective line, so modules, if you want sheaves on the projective spaces, that category is different from being modules over any kind of ring. But when you go to this derived setting, in fact, it's equivalent, perfect complex over a certain algebra, but a non-commutative one, and this algebra is in fact a path algebra of the Kronecker quiver. So the Kronecker quiver, simply a simple quiver which has two vertices and two arrows, simply, will be denoted by F and G. And so every time that I have a quiver, I have a path algebra associated to it. For instance, its generators are simply the arrows that we have F and G, and also these lazy arrows for each vertex. Let me call it P1 and P2. And the relations that you have are every time that you can compose arrows, you define in that way the composition. If you cannot compose them, you define in that way the multiplication. If you cannot compose them, you declare the multiplication to be zero. For instance, P1 is an idempotent. For instance, if you compose first F, so with P1, this is zero, which is different by doing the reverse procedure, etc. So the point being is that a path algebra over this quiver, modules over this algebra are exactly representations of this quiver. So this, what it's telling us is in fact that we are here merging representation of quivers and the study of algebraic geometry. They're in fact coincide in this world. Moreover, it's telling us that the projective space in this program is in fact an affine object. It's represented by an algebra. It's not a commutative one. Okay. One of the central pieces in this program is try to do an analog of the theory of motives, which was Grothendieck's dream in the 60s. The 50s and 60s. So Grothendieck had this vision of trying to develop a universal cohomology theory of algebraic varieties. And here, in fact, you can play the same game. So this notation here, when I will use both subscripts, that means that I'm talking quite generally. I'm not being very specific. So as I was saying, not only, for instance, if you grab an object here that you should think of it as being a non-commutative scheme, you can associate to this Hochschild homology, cyclic homology, periodic, etc. But in fact, you can do something better. You can construct something called a mixed complex. So it's an object in a certain direct category of a certain DG algebra. So this is a notion due to Cassel. Let me put his name here. So where this lambda is simply, so in the differential graded setting, we are always over a ring, which is this small k. So it's simply this algebra with zero square, and where b is of degree minus 1 and differential 0. And in fact, from this data, from this mixed complex, you can in fact recover all these invariants, Hochschild, cyclic, periodic, etc. So this is one kind of information that you can extract. Another thing is instead of considering K-theory groups, you can consider something richer, namely can consider this connective spectrum. So this connective spectrum from which you can recover these K-theory groups of Quillen and Villamayor and Karubi-Villamayor. And also, you can consider, in fact, non-connected versions. So you have a non-connected spectra also. And from which you can recover these negative K-theory groups in the sense of Bath, and also these homotopy K-theory groups in the sense of Weibull. OK, this is another kind of invariance that you can associate to these objects. Also, we can associate THH, TC, which are in fact examples of spectra. And in fact, the idea of motives is in fact to comb all these weed of invariants that we have, we want to combat, we want to comb all this information in order to isolate something universal, so I'll use the letter U, towards something motivic, which I'll use this word mod, in such a way that these all information will factor through it uniquely. So the idea is that, in fact, these are simply representations of something more intrinsic, and the importance of this is that every time that you have a result, if you state and prove a result that holds here, it will hold in every representation of it. Why not? So there are natural questions that appear here. So we can ask the following questions, which I call question B1. Is there the universal, there is something like the universal invariant? And question 2 is, if so, if such a universal object exists, and since universal objects tend to be rather formal, how can this theory of non-commutative motives help us to better understand this invariance, this classical invariance? Okay, so and the second main goal of the talk is also to provide an answer to question B1 and B2, and moreover, to show what is the relationship between the answers of questions A and questions B. So now I would like simply to make a paragraph. They are saying that will be a discussion after this. And so I've been learning these ideas of EHH quite recently, namely by Bloomberg, has been teaching me this. Now I'm always asking him if there is a topological analog of this beautiful picture. So that is something I would like to ask. So don't want to answer now, just later, okay? Okay, so the talk will bifurcate a little bit now. I will talk a bit about the differential graded setting a little bit, and then shift to the infinity category setting and present a joint work with Bloomberg and David Kepner. So let me talk about a little bit about the differential graded setting. If you want to solve question B1, the first thing that we have to do is really to identify which are the properties which are common to all these invariants. And one thing that we realize, if we understand invariants in this way, is that all these invariants, in fact, they take values in stable context, here in the drive category, here in spectra. So in fact, we can hope or ask this category to be in fact stable. But another property that all these invariants have is that they are drive Maurice invariants. That means that they send derived Morita equivalence. So derived Morita equivalence, what I mean by that? So simply suppose that you have a functor, a DG functor from A to B. So now what you can do, you can consider the derived category of B, derived category of A. This functor gives rise to a restriction functor here, and you ask this functor to be an equivalence of triangulated category. So they send this particular class of maps to isomorphs. And so the theorem number one that I would like to state is the following, that there exists a Quillen model structure on this category of DG categories, or non-commutative schemes, if you want, for which the weak equivalences are precisely the derived Morita equivalents. So before continue, just a piece of notation, I will denote by HMO from Omotopy and Morita, the Omotopy category obtained. So these results tell us that, in fact, now we have a purely algebraic setting, and now we, with this model structure, in fact, we can now try to import techniques from topology into this algebraic setting and try to reinterpret, for instance, old constructions. Let me exemplify this. So some applications of theorem one are the following. So there are some classical constructions. So one construction was performed by Bondal and Kapranov. So they developed this pre-triangulated envelope. So given a DG category, abstract one, which doesn't necessarily need to be stable, they have built a new one, which they called a pre-triangulated, so by explicit and construction, so it's something called one-side twisted complexes, where they use some upper triangulated matrices in such a way that now this triangulated this DG category is stable in the sense that if you take its homotopy category, it's triangulated, and in fact, it's the closest one associated to A. Now, using this new ideas, in fact, this can be characterized as being a fibrant resolution functor. So we have a more conceptual picture of what's really going on. Another construction in this program is the Drinfeld. So Drinfeld developed a DG quotient. So given A inside of B, so you can consider the following. You can consider the drive category of B, the drive category of A, which sits inside. And now you can perform this classical Verdier quotient in the world of triangulated categories. You can model B by A. And what Drinfeld did is, in fact, he has lifted this Verdier quotient from the world of triangulated categories to the DG setting. So he built a differential graded quotient. So this map, for instance, lives in this homotopy category in such a way that you recover this Verdier quotient by taking the homotopy category associated with. So Drinfeld's construction was elegant, but not very clear what it was expressing. And so now with this technology, in fact, we can understand it as being an homotopy cofiber construction. Another construction which has been playing a role in this program, it's Drinfeld's notion of smooth and proper. So Drinfeld really understood how to formulate smoothness and properness in the non-commutative world. So given a DG category A, so let A be a DG category, you say that she's proper. So you can consider the following. Given two objects, you can consider this complex of Hom complex associated between them. You can consider the cohomology here, the high cohomology, and consider its rank, and ask this to be finite, and moreover, the sum over OI to be finite. And so you declare in this way DG category to be proper, and you say that she's smooth when you look at it as a bimodule over itself, it is perfect. So being perfect means that as a bimodule over itself, it lands in this nice subcategory of perfect complexes. And this is, in fact, the correct notion in the sense that, let me put a remark, in the sense that if you take a scheme and you consider so this DG category associated to it, so this DG category is smooth and proper in this setting, in this sense, in this non-commutative sense, if and only if X is smooth and proper in the sense of classical algebraic geometry. Okay. Yes, there's always a field involved here. I'm being very vague, yes. So now, one thing that we can do, so we have this homotopy category. So we have this DG categories up to Dirac-Moritz equivalence. And in the same way that we can tensor differential graded algebras, we can tensor differential graded categories. So we have this operation, and we can drive this operation to be well-defined in this homotopy category. So in fact, we have a symmetrical monoidal structure, a symmetrical monoidal category here. So in every symmetrical monoidal category, we have the notion of dualizable objects, as Professor Cohen was telling us about. And in fact, these categories, in fact, they can be characterized as being precisely the dualizable objects in here. And moreover, so proposition, which I call proposition one, moreover, let A be a smooth and proper. Let A be smooth and proper. So that tells us that, in fact, it's a dualizable object. So every time that you have a dualizable object, you can define its Euler characteristics, so something that Professor Cohen calls dimension. So for instance, if you are in C-double complexes, those will be the finite C-double complex, and the Euler characteristic will be this alternating sums of zero cells, one cells, etc. So in this setting, the Euler characteristic of a smooth and proper category is, in fact, its Uschild homology. So let me just come back to here and say that one of the goals of Grothendieck in trying to develop this theory of motives is that you want to comb as far as possible in such a way when you re-understand this invariant that factor to it, in fact, you can understand the conceptual nature of this invariant. That was one of the main goals of Grothendieck. And here we are really understanding this. So for instance, Uschild homology that you can, there are several definitions possible. Here what we have done is that we have localized, we have inverted Dirac-Moritz equivalences, and already we have a conceptual picture what is in fact Uschild homology, simply Euler characteristic in this correct setting. Okay, this is, now let's change the setting, and now from now on I will talk about joint work with Gepner and Andrew Blomberg. I would like to answer that at the end, can I? So from now on, so this is joint with Blomberg and Gepner. Okay. So now I'll go to this infinity category setting, which is more powerful in the sense, for instance, now you can plug there, for instance, things coming from topology, given a, for instance, symmetric ring spectra, you can associate to this infinity category of compact objects, which is an infinity category. So let's come back to this problem. So we want to solve problem B1. First thing is identify common properties to all these. So let me state common properties. So having the algebraic setting, all these satisfy this Dirac-Moritz invariant. They also satisfy something I call co-continuity, which means that they preserve filtered co-limits. And more importantly, they satisfy this property of localization that Blomberg was telling us about yesterday. So let me recall this. So for every short exact sequence, so there is a notion of short exact sequence in this setting, in the setting of infinity categories. So you say that the sequence of infinity categories is stable if, when you pass to the homotopy categories associated to it, you have an exact sequence of triangulated categories in the sense of their DA. That means that this is fully faithful, and this is essential surjective up to direct factors. So the classical example, is if you take a scheme, you have an open in your scheme, and the closed complementary, you have perfect complexes on X, you can restrict perfect complex on the open, and then here you have perfect complex on X which are supported in Z. So this is a classical example, geometrical example of a short exact sequence. So every time that you are, you have this setting, not only those invariants will relate you by a long exact sequence, the invariants of A, B, and C, but you have something stronger. We have something called, we have triangles. So this is shown by, for instance, by Thomason. So we have a triangle in non-connective K theory. We have a triangle in homotopy K theory. And also we have a triangle, this is due to Bloomberg and Mandel. We have a triangle in TC and TH, etc. Okay, so not all invariants satisfy localization. In fact, this invariant is non-connective, these connective invariants do not. They satisfy something else, something called additivity. So we continue analyzing common properties of all them. Let me use first this board. Use first the lower board, please. So there are several ways to formulate additivity. One possible way is to say the following, that for every split short exact sequence, so this is an exact sequence as before, where now you have So that satisfies the relations that you would expect. So every time that we have this, what happens? So this is due to Waldhausen. What happens is that the K theory, the connective K theory of B splits as a direct sum of the K theory of A and the K-theory of C. So we have weak equivalence of spectra. And also, this is due to Karubi Villamayor. The Karubi Villamayor K-theory of B splits as a direct sum of this K-theory. Okay, more properties. Another important property is homotopy invariance. So this, I'll be slightly vague about this, so let me put between commas. So in the algebraic picture is that every time that you have a ring, every time that you pass to the associated polynomial ring, your invariant will not see the difference between these two. And so what we have done is, in fact, we have extended this notion to the infinity category setting, so it makes perfectly sense there also. And so we have all these properties on the board, on these two boards, and in fact, if you look at these invariants, so what you can say is that, for instance, localization implies additivity, that's clear, the converse is false, and for instance, this invariant satisfies localization but not homotopy invariance. This one is, for instance, the invariant which holds all the properties for it. Okay? So after identifying the common properties to this invariant, what we would like to do in order to build this category of motives is want to force these properties in a universal way. So the solution to question B1 is the following. So this is theorem 2. There are infinity categories, infinity functors, which satisfy those properties, namely Dreyfus-Morita invariant, Kuklick unity, and additivity or localization. So let me denote them by U of universal, add from additivity. So they take values in this stable infinity categories, which I call M from motives and add from additivity. That's the localizing analog. Okay, so there are infinity functors which satisfy this property, and more importantly, and are universal with respect to them. So that means that for every stable presentable infinity category D, we have equivalences. So on one side, you can consider these homotopy co-limit preserving functors from M add taking values in D. And now you can, every time that you have an object here, you can precompose it with U add. So you have this precomposition functor that takes values in this infinity category, which I call funct add from up infinity to D. So this is an equivalent. And also the localizing analog. So this result is in fact not telling us how these categories are in fact built, but they are telling us that they exist. In fact, they are built by this classical machinery of taking simplicial precious and then taking localizations, etc. But these properties characterize them. And you see an element in here. So by add, I mean that it satisfies these properties that hold for everything, and also additivity. So an element in here is something I call an additive invariant. Satisfy additivity, and this equivalence is telling us that in fact it corresponds to an element in here, which means a representation of this category of motives. And the localizing invariants, which are the elements in here, they correspond precisely to representations of this object. Okay. Moreover, we have also another result, another theorem, which we can call theorem 3, where we also have these functors, but you know we had homotopy invariants. We had homotopy invariants, and so now we have to decorate everything. So let me use a bold A to emphasize this. So we have another categories, and so where in here I use also an A to emphasize that now I'm considering additive invariants that also satisfy homotopy invariants, and also we see here. Also satisfying homotopy invariants. So this is maybe now it's a good place to make a diagram. Now I should go where? There, right? Okay. So a diagram which resumes this picture is the following. So you have this category cat infinity, you go to the additive invariant, then you go to the localizing ones, then you also here you have the homotopy invariant one, and here the homotopy and localizing invariant one. Okay, so for instance, if you have a representation of this, by that result telling us that this is in fact a localizing invariant which satisfies additivity, so by precomposing it with this, it tells us that it's also localizing by precomposing its additive, etc. Okay, so before continuing, let me just give an intuition. When we pass from this setting of non-commutative schemes towards downstairs, a lot of information is lost. Let me give an example. Again, if you have a projective space over a base field, for instance, the perfect complexes, if you have the perfect complexes of this, of Pn, if you descend it here, for instance, what happens is that it splits as a direct sum of the perfect complexes of your base field in question. So in fact, by n plus 1 copies of it, so this is something which holds in this homotopy category, and so it will hold in all the remaining ones. So this in fact is in fact some projective bundle formula, which is I don't know the word in English, sorry, but what I'm trying to say is that in fact it's a shadow of something more general, like a projective bundle formula, and this is not by chance, as the following results tell us. So what happens is that now the solution to questions A and B2 are the following. So solution to question A and B2 is the following. So this is theorem 4. It tells us that given a small infinity category A, we have weak equivalence of spectra. So we can consider the mapping spectra from this very simple object, from the sphere spectrum in here. If I place myself, for instance, in here, towards A, what I see when I look to A from this very simple object, what I see is the spectrum of K theory of A. When I go a little bit down in the localizing setting, what I see is the non-connective K theory of A. So in particular, in the triangulated categories, so in these triangulated categories, H, M add, and M log, what you see when you look from this object towards A, towards the nth disuspension of A, what you see is in fact the nth K theory group of A. And here, what you see is the nth negative, the nth non-connective K theory group of A. So for instance, an example. With one object and only the symmetric spectra as its units, as its endomorphisms, yes. As what you can see, that, for instance, as a spectral category to one object. And the example, for instance, you take a scheme, and so If you take A coming from a scheme, what you see downstairs, so you see in fact the K-theory groups of your scheme, and you see also the negative K-theory groups of your scheme. So before explaining this theorem, which is the main theorem of the talk, let me tell you that there's also another theorem, theorem 5. So to be coherent, I will use the same color. So theorem 5, where you also have the analog, but now in the when you go to this right side, if you go to this right side and you look at from this simple object, what you see is now Tarubi Villamayor K theory. Now in here, what you see is Weibull's homotopy K theory of A. And so here you have the analog, etc. Okay, so let me stop and explain this theorem, why this gives us a solution to the question. So the point being that so there are equivalents, there are two terms in the equivalence. So we have K-theory on the right terms, which is something defined in some way, bizarre way. But you also have the left terms, which are defined in a way that we never speak about K-theory. In the left term, we have never spoken about K-theory. The only thing that we have done is that we start with infinity categories, and we force in a universal way properties. Okay? And when you do that, when I look inside of this gadget that I obtain, and I look at the home spaces there, what I see is K-theory. So this, in a certain sense, you can take this equivalent as being the definition of K-theory. So this equivalence, in fact, gives you a conceptual picture, understanding what's inside K-theory. You can understand it as being the universal machine which satisfies additivity, the universal machine which satisfies localization, the universal machine which satisfies additivity and homotopy invariance, the universal machine which satisfies localization and homotopy invariance. Here, so I take the sphere spectrum and I see them as a spectral category with one object, so the endomorphisms are the symmetric ring spectra, so it's an infinity category. And so what I do is simply I take them here and I descend here and I look what happens in here. I look the home there. Okay? And this picture, if you want really to understand this, so there are these definitions of X groups, etc. Grothendieck introduced the notion of drive category in order to simplify all that. So X groups, they can be conceptually understood as the home spaces in the drive category. That's exactly what's happening here. This is like the X group. So the X groups in this category of motives are given by this K-theory group. This is more or less what it's telling you. Okay? So this gives you a completely new way to, and a conceptual way to understand K-theory. Okay? So we have a new way to understand what's happening. So the point is, how can this help us to go? So theoretically, every time that you have K-theory appearing somewhere, we can now try to re-understand what is really going on using this conceptual idea. Let me give you some application of this theorem. So there are several, but so applications of theorem 4 and 5. So we can play the following game. So you have K-theory. K-theory takes values in this category of spectra, infinity category of spectra. And K-theory, I'm taking the connective version, so it's an additive invariant. Okay. So in additive invariance, that simply means that something that lives here. So so by theorem, using this theorem, which is there, so theorem 2 tells us, in fact, that so it descends to this category of motives. So let me denote it by K add, gives rise to this functor here, to this realization coming out from here. Okay, but now if I have another one, E, which is also additive, by theorem 2 again, it also descends. Okay, but what happens, and what this theorem is telling us, is that this functor is very special. Another way to reformulate this theorem, to re-understand this theorem, is telling us that this functor, K-theory, becomes co-representable by this object, which is a very simple object. So, and every time that you want to understand natural transformations between functors in which one of them is co-representable by one object, that's very simple. So using theorem 3 plus Yoneda lemma, what it's telling is that the mapping spectrum of natural transformations from KAD to EAD, this in fact corresponds to the evaluation of this functor on the object which co-represents the functor, which is that one. And so using again theorem 2, we can test come back to K-theory and so understand that the mapping spectrum of K-theory towards E identifies with the value of E in the sphere spectrum. So automatically, the co-representability of this K-theory tells you, classifies you completely all natural transformations coming out from K-theory towards another additive invariant. So here I play the game with the additive case. You can play the game with anything else. And so for example, if you take E, the topological Hochschild homology, K-theory is difficult to calculate. I've seen this in the talk of Professor Valkill, sorry. And for instance, in order to understand K-theory, we built natural transformations towards something simpler, like these cyclotomic trace maps. So if I take E to be THH, what I know is that the mapping spectrum from K-theory towards THH, I know that this identifies with the evaluation, so the spectrum in here. So in particular, the connected components, why not? We have this identification, but this is that. So this theorem automatically tells us that up to homotopy, there are Z natural, possible natural transformations from K-theory to HH. Okay? So, and now in Z, there is a particular element. Namely, there is the unit, which is an element in here. So this element, the unit, should correspond to something here. What? And this is exactly the cyclotomic trace map. So this result is telling you not only a way, a very elegant and simple way to construct the cyclotomic trace map. You just grab the one, the identity in Z, and you have the cyclotomic trace map automatically without any funny, bizarre constructions. But moreover, it characterizes the cyclotomic trace map inside all possible natural transformations as being the unit. So it gives you a new way to look at this very important construction, as everybody here knows much better than me. And so this is one possible application. Let me say something more. So one very important thing in the theory of motives is always the monoidal structures, which I haven't talked about. So let me say something about it. So the monoidal structure, So this category carries the monoidal structure. So, and so the theorem, which I call theorem 6, tells us that there are how I wrote this. No, that's not there are. But I forgot again. So the infinity categories. So these infinity categories, M odd and M log carry monoidal structures. And these infinity functors, U add and U log, are Lex monoidal. So in the sense that, in fact, we have, So in the sense that the theorem that was here, the later theorem, in fact, so you can extend the monoidal structure towards here by some fancy convolution. And you can, in fact, inherit that result that tells you that you have this equivalence between homotopy co-limit functors and additive ones. Now you can plug monoidal structures also. You have this higher So that gives you a conceptual picture of what is this Monaldo structure. And so in particular, so there are some consequences of having this structure. So every time that you have a monoidal structure in a category, automatically the category becomes, if it is symmetric, becomes enriched in modules over the endomorphisms of the unit. So as a consequence, for instance, this category, so before continuing again, there's also another result, which I call theorem 7, where you also have the same picture in the homotopy invariant case. And so a consequence is that this category, in fact, is enriched in modules over the mapping spectrum of the unit. And the unit is precisely that object I was talking about, so this very simple object. So this, in particular, emphasizes that universal property of the this characterization of K-theory. In fact, with respect to the monoidal structure, this is, in fact, the unit. So you can see homotopy theory is the Holmes out of the unit towards your object, okay? So this is enriched in modules over this, but modules over this by that theorem is telling us, so theorem 4 is telling us that this, in fact, is the K theory spectrum of the sphere spectrum, but it is the A theory of a point. So in fact, we see here that this category of motives is, in fact, enriched in modules over A theory, for instance. Another consequence is that we can in fact combine this theorem 6 plus theorem 4. So theorem 6 is telling us that these functors are Lex monoidal, that these functors are Lex monoidal, okay? And theorem 4 is telling us that the K theory can be recovered as homing out from the unit, but homing out from the unit is a Lex monoidal functor. So by combining the two, you automatically get that all these K-theory functors are, in fact, Lex monoidal. So for instance, if you take a, let me put this between parentheses, if you take a EN ring spectrum, so you can take its infinity category of modules. It carries a monoidal structure in the sense of Lurie, which is E n minus 1. And so by applying this, we see that every time that you have something of this kind, I'll get E minus 1 K-theory spectrum. So this is one possible application. So probably Professor John Francis will speak more about this EN geometry. I think it's time, but yeah, that's what I want to say. Thanks. I can. This theorem is richer. I'll transfer. This theorem is richer. In fact, what should I raise? Yeah, let me erase here. So in fact, this theorem is richer. In fact, you can replace this by something slightly bigger, namely a dualizable object here. And in this case, you can replace this by the home object in between B and A. So it's like a bivariant theory. And if you take schemes, if you take, for instance, smooth projective schemes, what you'll see is this, in fact. You see the K-theory of their product in there. And in fact, you can also work about the composition and understand them as being like correspondence, what happens in the world of. You can do that, yes. No, what I'm saying is that in fact you can
you can understand the composition in this category as being the composition of correspondence. Yes. Yes. So to say something about your question, like that you asked, let me tell you what I know. So you can play the following game. So so you can take smooth projective varieties and you go towards this category of pure motives. You take rational equivalence and you consider rational coefficients also. So if you take X and Y, the Hom space in here, this will be the shell group of their product. Okay. Now the way to pass to the non-commutative world, I can pass to this non-commutative world by this procedure of taking perfect complexes. And so if I go here, what I see, the Hom between this at birth. What I see is in fact the K0 of that product. Okay. And now what you can do is that you can rationalize this. So now Hom of this you'll have K0 rationalized. And in here there's a very special object, the tape motive. So in fact tensoring with respect to this object is an automorphism, because this object is invertible. So if I have an automorphism in a category, I can define an orbit category in the space. So I'm basically killing this action in a categorical sense. So I can perform this orbit category, modding out by tensoring with this state object. And by doing so, the Hom space is here. The way that this category is defined is in fact the direct sum of this shell group. And so here you see the connection. It comes from, in fact, the Chern character. Gives you, in fact, this connection. So morally, the pure motives modulo the action, this action, so the orbit category, so when you mod out by the action of the tape object, this embeds in this rational version of the motive. And there exists and should exist an analog in this picture with the Vervotsky triangulated category also. Yeah, there are lots of things to do, yeah. Yeah. It will factor. I don't know how to reinterpret there. Those invariants that I've talked about, all those factor through it. And what I'm saying is that. What do you mean by stable homotopy? That I'm not so sure. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's something I haven't thought about yet. In fact, all those invariants have some transfer. So there are some particular cases of maps for which they have transfers, and those you can define a theory with transfers directly in these settings. Let's discuss. Yes, I would like.
Sure.
Yes, there's a similar. Okay, there is a similar picture. If I replace THH by TC, we can do a similar argument and recover it also. Yeah. No, these THH are not connected things like Andrew was telling us about.
So this is another THH, this one that the one we just defined. So this THH, this is the one.
This is the one that Andrew defined yesterday.
The non-connected.
So for
the connection that
we have. Sorry?
So it would
be the same for all of them? Yes. Okay. Oh, was there another question? Quick.